Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
All right, John, we got the holiday weekend coming up. Well, I guess holiday midweek. We still got some NFL news to get through. What do you like that's happening out there today? We got Reuben Foster suspended a couple games. Got a Packers running back, Aaron Jones. He's been suspended two games. What, did they do their end-of-the-week news dump today on Tuesday since it's a holiday? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, so I kind of wonder if they're going to have the waiver wire on Thursday and Friday, knowing that they kind of did a July 3rd news dump. I mean, three suspensions because and all you know to critical teams in that affect the Seahawks because they're all in the NFC. And so, this was the news dump because, you know, Aaron Jones is their most talented running back. And remember, they wanted to make the effort to try to run the ball, and he's their most exciting runner. And so now he's out for the first two games. That was a marijuana charge from a year ago. Then you have Jamon Brown, one of their better young guards with the Rams. Now he gets out. He's got a two-game suspension for substance. And Reuben Foster kind of got the double dip but came out a little bit better than I think he expected because, you know, he had the gun charge and he had a substance charge. You know, he didn't get anything on the domestic that, the girl admitted that she was wrong and basically lied to the police as far as his involvement with that, even though her face was all battered up and all that stuff. So, you know, the 49ers, I think, came out a little bit luckier. It was a two-game suspension. Looks like they took one game for the gun and then one game for the substance.
Okay, and nothing for the domestic.
Nothing for the domestic.
Yeah, because right. John Lynch said, look, he's gone, right?
Yeah. If he hit her, he was gone. Yeah. They were going to cut him.
Yeah. How is, you know, and I check in every once in a while just because John Lynch, I think a lot of people raised eyebrows when he was signed there as the general manager coming out of the TV booth. But how is he being perceived as far as by football people around the league and also 49er fans?
Yeah. Oh, I think very in high regard, you mm-hmm. know, because, you know, a lot. So some of the personnel goes to Kyle Shanahan. I think he still has a big hand in it while John is, getting involved and learning everything. But I think you can see how, and you know how smart John Lynch is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I don't know if I would put him pretty much on the same plane as maybe a Richard Sherman for just how bright he is. I mean, you can see he's now the spokesman for the franchise and does such a great job at that. But I think you can also see that he has a pretty good plan. And he's worked very well because it's not just a matter of picking players and the draft choices and that, but I think, you know, a plan as far as, you know, getting talent in there, getting contract extensions. I mean, you know, clearly, I think, you know, he was probably more involved in getting Jimmy Garoppolo than Kyle Shanahan. And the reason I say he was probably more involved is because Kyle was looking forward to getting Kirk Cousins. He had him in Washington. They basically, you know, they have the same agents because, you know, one agent is Kyle's and one is Kirk's. And they, you know, they probably knew they could work out a deal. But then for a second round pick, I think, you know, Lynch just basically said, this is a steal. We've got to get this guy. And they did. And now they've upgraded their quarterback position and they did it five games earlier or a half season earlier than they would have this year. So I think they're ahead of the curve there. But I think that you can see he's bright. He's done a nice job of kind of mixing in veterans and, you know, getting younger players in and then trying to find ways to get guys to contract extensions that are reasonable. So, no, I think he's done a very good job, and I think that he's probably respected, you know, as one of the better young general managers in football.
What kind of a year do you think Garoppolo will have?
I don't think it's going to be as good as everybody anticipates, but I still think it's going to be good, you know, because I think he's a talented quarterback. But, I mean, everybody saw the 5-0 start, and really it's like, okay, I know the Jacksonville win was huge, but there was like, five games. I mean, we have Chicago in one game. You know, they didn't have the toughest closing schedule, and so they took advantage of that. And, of course, there was no pressure. And so now there's going to be a little bit more pressure because, remember, they're coming from the horrible start, and so there was nothing really on the line. But now games are going to be more pressurized, and we'll see how he goes. And we saw that he struggled a little bit at the mini camp and struggled a little bit in the OTAs. And even Kyle Shanahan admitted that. But I still think that, you know, what you're looking back is that he won't have the same overall short numbers that he had last year, so he's going to kind of level off. But I still think he's going to be a good quarterback.
All right, John, we know that Terrell Owens had said he's not going to attend his induction into the Hall of Fame. He's now kind of made it clear what he's going to be doing. I thought when he said he wasn't going that he was going to have some sort of party that he was going to try to raise money from because there's a lot of thought or question, I know, among people around the league about how much money he has left from his career. But now he said that he's going to give his induction speech at his alma mater, which is the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. So he'll essentially be live via like satellite or something like that. What's your understanding of what he's
going to
do?
I don't know. It's up to the networks to see if they want to pick up what he's going to do and what he's going to say. But it's like, I still think it's a cheap thing on his part. And remember, it's like, I don't know if he had enough money to have a party down in Canton. He may or may not. There seems to be those rumblings that he may not. And I think that it's pretty evident to see, because this is, I think, what you can look at. Did any of the five teams he played with want to take him down? Apparently not. I mean, he may not have gotten the full support of San Francisco. I mean, you would figure that the 49ers would be the ones, particularly, with the Bartolo family involved and all that, that would embrace this and get it done. Well, guess what? They didn't. And so I think that says something about the bridges that he's burned and, the different people that could have, helped him get inducted that didn't have it. But at least in going back to his alma mater, he doesn't have to really incur probably any expenses, because I'm sure that they're going to take the expenses of that. And then he does get to honor what, help make him as a player what he was, and what the work and the dedication that he had from college. But I just think it's a lame thing that he's doing in not honoring, the fans that he has. And I would hope, I would really hope that no network would pick up that broadcast. But it's TO, so you know they will.
Yeah, that's really – I guess I hadn't thought of that, that it's possibly that – because the people who have parties there, if you hosted a Hall of Fame induction party, you're responsible for footing the bill for that.
That's
not like that. So I don't think I realized that it's possible that TO saw what it was going to cost to host something there and decided, you know what, that's not how I want to spend my money, is paying for my own party when I get inducted.
Mm-hmm. But really, when you think about the big picture, he voted in after 3 years to go into the Hall of Fame, but he's outside the Hall of Fame. He's really on the outside looking in because of this decision. Because one of the great things is that they invite everybody back who's got the gold jackets every year. And so will they invite him when he didn't show up for the first year? I would tend to doubt it. What are fans that maybe of other teams, what are Dallas fans, maybe Washington Redskin fans, when they go to the Hall of Fame, what would they do when they pass the T.O. Plaque and everything else? I mean, with the bronze statue. And they're not going to really give that respect. And really, he'll be looking back at this for the next 14 years, and I think that's probably how long it's going to take for him to recognize the mistake that he makes and realize this was a horrible mistake. Because the horrid part of it is that here was his chance to, enjoy, be part of it. He's disrespecting the people that are in there before. I mean, he is an outsider. You want to be in the Hall of Fame, but now he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's put himself outside the Hall of Fame, and that's not good. And by doing that, it's like, do you think a John Lynch would have appreciates the fact, or Joe Jacoby has been waiting 25 years to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. T.O. getting in there and then not wanting to show up took away a spot from him, took away a spot from Steve Hutchinson, took away a spot from Kevin Mawai. I still stand by the fact that I don't regret voting for him and giving him the chance to get into the Hall of Fame, but I do regret what he's doing because I think he's making a horrible mistake, and he's not showing because if he's still mad at not having that knock on the door by Dave Baker, who runs the Hall of Fame, and saying, hey, your life has been changed. Well, guess what? His life has not been changed. He's now a Hall of Famer, but he's on the outside looking in.
Well, you may not want to answer that question, John. I would understand, but if you knew that he was going to do this, would you still vote for him?
I still would vote for him.
Yeah. Okay, it is weird because, and look, like you said, Danny, it would be one thing if it's a whole bunch of money it's going to cost him. But, man, that's the whole thing is getting to Canton, right? I mean, that's the part of it because I got a chance to go for Elway's induction there. And it's like, man, that's just being honored there in Canton. I mean, and you're not physically going to go there? That just doesn't make any sense to me. That's really weird. And so, is the custom that teams will pick up the cost?
No, I mean, it's up to, I mean, you would think you would have support of, the teams, but it's like, because.
But there's some, I mean, I'm just saying for like Elway or, Walter Jones, will the mm-hmm. Seahawks pay for that party or is it?
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's some, because, they're going to honor, his recognition. I mean, I've never gotten into the particulars as far as, Ken Easley. I'm sure that they have to incur some costs and all that stuff, but you would have to think the teams would be involved. I mean, you see the, you know, the loyalty that like this organization is going to have for the Walter Joneses and Steve Largents and Ken Easleys and people like that. And so you can work it out, because again, it's like you want to have the support of the team. I just wonder, because the way the team dumped him, and you know, Philadelphia is not going to do anything for him. Dallas isn't going to do anything for him. He may not have had a team support in all that. And I think that had to show one of the reasons why he didn't get in the first couple years. You know, we never kept him out because, you know, we didn't like him for how he dealt with people. That's not the case. What it was is, you know, some of the things that he did in the locker room to the quarterbacks, you know, cast a negative light that affected what happened to him on the field. And how did it affect on the field? Because again, we are not, as voters, supposed to take off the field things and cast votes against. The idea is, if it is something like, you know, you now create problems in your locker room, then that is germane. That's all part of it. And that's one of the reasons it took him a couple years, because, you know, when the two teams that had you in the prime of his career, they just got rid of him. They got sick of him. He was too much of a problem.
Yeah, that was basically the argument. People that weren't voting for him weren't that he's too big a butthead to let him in. It was, hey, part of being a productive Hall of Fame player is being a good teammate. And if you are so disruptive as a player that two different teams essentially dumped you mm-hmm. in the prime of your career, and that you got in the way of your team's winning in some cases, that was the argument against him, not against his productivity or saying that, hey, we don't like him personally. It was that professionally, your attitude had an impact in the kind of player you were.
See, this affected Charles Haley to a certain degree because, I mean, you have to admit, it was a butthead. I mean, you know, fought with a teammate in the parking lot, and he basically treated his teammates pretty bad. And, you know, he was a handful for a coach. And as time went on, you know, people kept pushing for him, rightfully so, because he's sitting there with just about more Super Bowl rings than anybody else, because he got him in Dallas and San Francisco. And then finally he got in. And what was his response to it? He embraced it and loved it. I mean, it was such a great memory for him. I know I think pretty much each year he goes to the Super Bowl and goes on the radio row and makes that circuit. So, you know, I think you realize, I mean, sometimes it does hold you back, but ultimately, if you're a Hall of Famer, you should be able to get in. And Tia was always going to get in, and I'm fortunate. I was happy that Charles Haley, one of the things that held Charles Haley back, I mean, he was starting to be voted on at a time that you had like five or six pass rushers. You know, here he is going against Kevin Green. Here he is, you know, going against, Derek Thomas. And so those guys take votes away from each other. It's kind of like the offensive linemen, you know, because when you had Joe Jacoby and you have Tony Baselli and Kevin Mawai and Alan Faneca and Steve Hutchinson, you have five guys like that and you're 15, they take votes away from each other, and so it slows it down. But one by one, once they start going in, then everything gets taken care of.
Charles Haley, I've heard different stories about...
I knew you were going to bring this story up.
Because I want to know what happened, because supposedly what precipitated his way out of San Francisco is, I've heard two versions. Mm-hmm. I've heard one, which is that he relieved himself in George Seifert's office. The other is that he relieved himself on George Seifert's tires. Have you heard either of those?
The one I think it was, wasn't it Tim Harris?
Oh, was it Tim
Harris? Yeah, I think the Tim Harris one, because I don't know if it was Tim Harris's tires, but I think he caught Tim Harris on the tires and Tim Harris himself.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was McVay who was the GM, and I was in his office one time. Remember looking at his desk, going, "I wonder where it happened." Because Charles Haley, that was always like one of those, and I don't know if it was an urban legend or whatever, but supposedly he defecated on top of McVay's vest, desk. So
there's also a great clip. I think they did a Football Life on Charles Haley. I love, like, the NFL Network, their Football Life documentaries that they do are awesome. And Holmgren was talking about Charles Haley, and he goes, he was a great player. And he got into a fight every day at practice. Every day. It was just this great today. Every day, get into a fight out there on practice.
Hey, Professor, we're talking to Dan Quinn at 5 o'clock to get his thoughts on Cam Chancellor. I'm just wondering how things are looking for him down there, the head coach of the Falcons, what kind of a season Atlanta will have. And, boy, they've got that hangover from the Super Bowl to deal with.
Yeah, they do, and that's going to cost him, and you can see it cost him in maybe some big games. But I think he's doing a great job. I mean, I think the only worry they have right now is that losing Dontari Poe and the changes to defensive tackle, are they going to be good enough at defensive tackle? But, I mean, he did what was expected. And remember, I mean, 2 years ago, even though they had a really good team, they still gave up like 24, 25 points. I think it was 25 points a game. In fact, if I remember right, wasn't exactly what the 2010 Seahawks gave up. And then once they started getting, you know, Richard Sherman together out there and Cam Chancellor, it goes down to about 20. And so I used that model to see what would happen with the Falcons, and it pretty much followed the same model. I mean, he came back in two drafts ago. I mean, he gets his Bobby Wagner type of linebacker in Deion Jones. You know, Canoe Neal was the safety that he wanted to kind of be his Cam Chancellor. And so he was able to get another linebacker out there. And so he was able to start getting the type of players that he had in Seattle. You know, he has, you know, rangy type of cornerbacks. That's working out. So the defense is getting better. The only holdup, you know, was the Steve Sarkisian offense had such a big drop off from Kyle Shanahan. If they can fix that, everything should be good. But, you know, they're just right now one of the top teams and in the toughest division in football.
You think they're starting to get worried about Julio Jones? I know that you've mentioned that, hey, Julio's already paid at the top of his position group, and he's got too much time left on his contract to think about redoing it. Do you think they're starting to worry, though, that he might make even bigger stink about it?
No, because I think that the model that they may use, if, you know, Julio agrees, because, you know, if you go up and you take his average from like 14.2 to 17, now you got a problem. Because now, you know, anybody that's on a multi-year deal can come in and say, hey, what's the deal? It's like, you got to take care of me. Like, if you're Alex Mack, you want to redo your contract. If you're Devontae Freeman, let's say, for example, one of the running backs gets $10 million or more, then Devontae Freeman can come in and say, hey, you know, I got to get $10 million because I'm a $10 million back. But if they do what they did with Antonio Brown, which is basically moving money around, where the average really didn't change, it just they move some back cash into future cash, then I think if you do that for a couple of years, then you can set it up so maybe you get to that last year and then do the extension. So there's a way to do it that can work. But if you just take the average from 14 and a quarter to 17 or 18, then you got problems.
All right, John, we've also had a piece of news that's broken while you've been on the air with us here. Julian Edelman's appeal of his suspension has been denied. That was first reported by Adam Schefter. So he's going to get dinged 4 games. So it is officially the bad news suspension dump that usually occurs on Friday afternoon is happening on Tuesday afternoon this
week. Yeah, because that's four. That's pretty crazy to get 4 suspensions in one day.
Not a surprise, though, that Edelman's appeal has been denied, is it?
Not really. I mean, you know, again, not knowing the particulars because they held that in secrecy, it's like, you know, I didn't necessarily buy the idea that they didn't know what the substance is. Well, you can't suspend somebody if you don't know what the substance is. That's just not right. So they had to find out, and if they hadn't informed Edelman, I guess they officially informed him today, here's what you violated and here's what it is. And even though Richard Sherman was able to be successful in showing that the chain of evidence was broken, I guess in this case, Julian Edelman was not able to do this. So as he called it, his very vigorous, it was a vigorous defense on that and an aggressive defense. Incomplete.
Yeah, that would be there. It's interesting. The only person that I can remember of getting in trouble where they didn't know quite what it was DJ Williams, the linebacker for the Denver Broncos. Yeah. And he provided a sample that was inconsistent with human urine. was the description that the NFL used. Like, that was, he provided a sample that was inconsistent with human urine.
Which would be a little bit different.
Got his dog or...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Went to the cat litter box or whatever. Yeah, that's pretty bold there.
Yeah.
There's also the fake,
The Wizenator, Ontario Smith, that was there. On The Wire, what they did was there was a guy that, one of the plot points on The Wire was that there was a man who would broker in urine that he got from preschoolers, and he would sell that and charge for it, and they would have what the price was of clean urine that day in Baltimore. It was like a free market situation.
From the text toy, why do you guys find the grossest topics to always talk about?
Yeah, exactly.
425, I mean, thank you.
We're just talking about sports.
That's exactly right.
Okay, well, and speaking of this, Aaron Jones, he was a guy running back for the Packers, John, that got popped, and you talked about him at the outset there, but How much is that going to affect their running game? Just because they have Jamal Williams, who had the most yardage, and
right.
I think they wanted to go in with like a three-headed sort mm-hmm, of like mm-hmm. they did last year. But Jamal Williams, 556, Ty Montgomery, 273, and then Aaron Jones, 448.
Yeah. Now, I think it's going to hurt because he's their most explosive back, and I think he's the one that they really wanted to be the main back, you know, because, you know, he does have more ability and more speed and all that stuff, and that's going to hurt because, you know, it does take away one of what's supposed to be, you know, an improved running game, and they really wanted to try to get that thing going, and so that's going to be a little bit of a setback. I guess the fortunate thing, it's only going to be for two games, and so they just have to try to patch it up for a couple.
Professor, I can't wait. It's Denver, the Seahawks at Denver, September 9th. They've got a betting line on it. Denver's favored by 2. Which way would you lean on that one right now?
I think that I would lean toward the Seahawks right now because, you got the first game of a new quarterback, Case Keenum. You know, obviously, they won't have Case Keenum out there with a good scouting report on what he can do with the Denver Broncos, but also Case Keenum in Denver won't have a good scouting report on what to see from the Seahawks. I mean, you'll have four games in the preseason to take a look and get a glimmer, but they're not gonna I guess they can say, okay, we can see how Shaquille Griffin and Byron Maxwell how they fit in on their adjusted roles, moving from side to side. They'll have to kind of adjust to the safety position and then try to make the big adjustment where they are on the defensive line, particularly that pass rush. And that's what I think where the big difference can be. If the Seahawks can kind of catch them with their speed and the pass rush and take advantage of that and get to Case Keenum. And then on the other thing, they're not going to have an idea what Kyle Shanahan's going to be trying to do with the revised offense, which is supposed to feature more running plays.
Professor, do you want to hear how I advise people entering this holiday weekend to drink responsibly?
How's that?
All right, like this. Please drink responsibly.
Okay, do you want to slur that one more time?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like
exactly. Sounds like somebody should have taken his own advice.
Yeah, coming from a drunk guy.
Yeah, that would be there. John, also two questions for you very quickly.
Yeah.
First, who's tougher, rugby players or American football players?
American football players.
Okay. And then the second thing is hot dog eating an abomination?
No. I like watching that.
You do? Attaboy, Professor. Joey Chestnut.
Joey Chestnut's fantastic. I mean, is the Black Widow going to be there tomorrow?
The Black Widow.
The Black Widow's fantastic.
Oh, the female.
Yeah.
I think the females put down like 41 was the, mm-hmm. the number, the highest.
Didn't Joey get up to like 75 last year or something like that?
73, I think it was.
No, he gets better and better each year.
Yeah, I don't
I
know
still wish
if better
Kobayashi.
The right
well,
point.
They got to get Kobayashi coming back.
Is he holding out for a new contract?
No, I think they banned him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that...
PEDs?
No.
He had a second stomach added. He's like a cow.
He had a heartburn, I think.
All right, Professor, we appreciate it, man. Have a safe and happy 4th, and please drink responsibly. All right, that is John Clayton. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. Download the podcast at 710sports.com. Shohei Ohtani is in the lineup tonight. We'll tell you what the Mariners need to do and, well, why this division isn't going to get any easier going forward. That's next.
This is Danny, Dave, and more.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings PSB. Their brown sugar bourbon. We're here taking you into the holiday weekend. I always love the 4th of July. In fact, the sun's out today. See the barge out on Lake Union getting ready for the fireworks tomorrow night. The Angels are in town. You listen to the pregame right here at 6 o'clock. First pitch, 710. Right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And then pretty soon here, Mike Trout will come up to the plate, hitting number 2. I hope the Mariners walk him. The Mariners walk him every time they face him.
I do too in a way. But I thought it was interesting. I think it's supposed to be 84 tomorrow. But I thought it was interesting what you had to say during the break about, because I was wondering, why wouldn't they have Mike Trout hit third to give him more guys in front of him to drive in? And yet you made a good case as to why he's hitting second.
Statisticians will tell you that hitting second is the spot to put your best hitter. Like, that's where he should hit because he will get more at-bats there than he would hitting number 3. You also, the reason you don't hit him leadoff is because you want to have a better hitter in front of him for the possibility that he can get on base. Not specifically just, hey, get in scoring position so he can get driven in. But you want a better hitter. You don't want the nine hitter being the one in front of him, because if you get a leadoff hitter, if somebody like D. Gordon or somebody with an even better on-base percentage, if he homers, which Mike Trout is known to do from time to time, especially in this stadium, then it's a multi-run homer rather than just a bases empty thing. But that's what they would tell you, that statistically you should, your best hitter, and specifically one that's got some pop to him, should hit second.
So who gets to pitch against Mike Trout? Because somebody texted in, what about Diaz?
I'd let Diaz pitch to him.
Good question. How about Paxton?
Not Juan Nicasio.
Okay, Paxton? Not Juan Nicasio.
Paxton, if you come up with runners like first and second, because that's really the tough. It's, if there's a runner on second or second and third, it's easy, right? It's like runners on first and second, or even with the bases loaded.
You imagine service in the dugout having a list where, you know, pitchers that will pitch to Trout, pitchers who won't, pitchers I'm on the fence with. Because it'd be fun to go down that list. But I see Paxton, you let him pitch to anybody in baseball.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
come
Diaz,
on, Danny.
You let him pitch to anybody.
I'm really excited.
Walk him. Just look at the ump and you go, no hesitation, go ahead. Somebody mentioned on the text toy here that, and I think it's true too, I mean, Trout's always hit Felix well, even when Felix was going well.
Yes, he did. He has obliterated Felix. The only downside, because I actually would say that I don't even care about the specific math of it. I just don't want to see Mike Trout beat me. The tough thing would be, and the reason I'd let Diaz and probably end up letting Paxton pitch to him, is that you wouldn't like the statement it sends to the guy that's supposed to be your ace or supposed to be your closer, where he's like, yeah, I just don't want you pitching to this guy. Like, it's a bad statement. Everybody else, I don't care about their hurt feelings, but I wouldn't want, you want James Paxton, especially in a season when you're looking at the possibility of a wild card game where it's going to be hopefully Paxton that's on the mound for you in that, you wouldn't want there being any glimmer of a lack of confidence in him, that you're our guy against anyone no matter what.
Except for Mike Trout.
But man, Mike Trout, like, who was it? It was Tony La Russa. I remember when he walked Barry Bonds with the bases loaded back when Barry Bonds was really steroidy, that he was there and everybody's like, you're walking in a run. It's like, yeah, because chances are he's going to do something worse than that. If we pitch to him.
All right, ninth inning, and you have a one-run lead, and there's a guy at second base for the Angels.
You
walk him, even though they always say in baseball you shouldn't put the go-ahead run on.
Yeah, let the decrepit husk of Albert Pujols come up next.
Just get a kick out of how you trash on Albert Pujols.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, why would you trash on that guy?
I don't know, because he's become a bad player. It's weird. He just looks like a desiccated husk.
I say this at the risk of saying, have you looked at his stats? And I did that earlier with Casper Wells, and I was a little off. I don't think Pujols is having that bad of a year, though. I mean, I don't know for sure, but last I checked.
That means you don't know at all.
He's batting .249.
Yeah, that's not terrible.
It's 12 home runs. 35 RBIs.
That's decent. Okay. He's serviceable. I'd still, you run around second and an out, no outs. Yeah, I'm walking Trout. Let Pujols come up. Yeah. In one run game, I'm walking Trout that was there. The other thing that's happened is that the Mariners are, this is the best division in baseball. Like, American League West, you've got four of the five teams are all above .500. And the Texas Rangers, they're the best last place team of any division in the American League. It's the best division in baseball, which is strange to say because that has certainly not often been the case.
Yeah, I guess you can't really say it's the AL East, even though they have got the Yankees and the Red Sox. They've got Tampa Bay, which is one game above .500, but the Orioles take them down, and the Blue Jays, I'm not sure where they are right
now. Yeah, the Blue Jays are floundering. You've got two really good teams, or two super teams, as Jim would say, and then one
super teams.
Yeah, and one competent team in the Tampa Bay Rays.
I have no idea where I came up with that.
Angels also coming in here with, they're kind of a little bit snake bit this year. Otani, do we know if he's going to play in this series?
He's going to play. He's going to hit. He's not going to pitch. So he's in the lineup tonight as the DH.
Yeah, and Zach Cozart's missed time. Andrelton Simmons.
He's back, though, now. He's hitting fifth tonight.
Yeah,
Simmons
and then,
is.
Right. And then, you know, who's the other, the Garrett Richards? I mean, it's been tough for them. And that'd be the only thing, you know, we had the wet blanket thrown on the Mariners this morning. What's the guy's name?
Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports.
That would be the only thing. But I think I've shed that worry about injuries, because that's the thing that would kill him and that would bring him down. And that's what the Angels are going through right now.
The bat flipper is not in the lineup tonight.
Yeah.
Valbuena?
He's not in the lineup. The bat flipper on the would-be double, I forget who threw him out, whether it was a Gamble or was it...
No, it was Haniger, right? Haniger. It was Haniger that threw out with the no-look tag to Gene Segura.
Yeah, the behind-the-back tag.
Yeah, that he was able to apply that was there. I think the Mariners are going to end up dealing more with the A's than the Angels when it's all said and done.
It appears that way, but do you really have any fear of the Oakland Athletics?
I think the A's are a good team. And mostly it might be because I think they've got a lot of young, really effective players. I think the A's, as is often the case, it's a pretty well-assembled team. Like sometimes they're never expensive and bad, and they're often inexpensive and good. And there's some years that they're not put together that well, and there's some times where you wonder if they make the best of decisions, and the fact that Sonny Gray is now a Yankee instead of an Oakland A. Like they tend to, because of the budget restrictions that they have, they tend to not have a lot of horsepower, but I think they're a pretty competent team. And I just think the Angels pitching, and we've seen it, the number of Angels starters who have ended up on the disabled list, and Garrett Richards is coming back, and he is going to pitch now after having, what was it? Was it a sprain?
Hamstring.
The hamstring that he strained in the game
here. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course he pulled a hamstring.
He was asked to do something athletic, and it came back and bit him.
Was he in a dead sprint?
No.
He just had to come off, a dead sprint off of the mound. He pulled his hammy.
Well, maybe you could have, I was thinking about it after our conversation yesterday about pitchers and you don't want them to do things. Like maybe have like an invisible fence for the pitcher like you do with River.
For River.
Then you go around with him and go, danger, and point to the...
Wave the flags.
Right.
That would be there. Anytime a pitcher runs off of the dirt surface of the mound, you're like, whoa, be careful. Don't do too much here.
Hey, but with you guys, to your line of thinking here, is that it's Houston that's got to worry about the Oakland A's and not the Mariners.
Because that's right.
You have them ticketed to win the AL West.
I've never said that. I've said they'll be in first place again before the season is out.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, that's what I've said.
All right.
I don't remember that stipulation.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was they were going to win the AL West.
Sure, okay, they'll win the AL West.
Okay, there we go.
You think if you were doing Chicago sports radio, you'd be saying the same thing about the Mariners?
No, because I'd probably be focused on Chicago teams because I'd want people to listen to my show. Instead of having a dozen Seattle Mariners, like I would be like, I've cornered the market on Seattle Mariner fans here in the Windy City. Anybody want Mariner news? You know where to turn.
That was a good comeback, by the way. I just want to applaud you for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
I appreciate that, Jim. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you, Danny. Same to you. Dave, happy 4th of July.
Yeah, same to you.
It's time for us to sweep the Dow. We'll do that next. Terrell Owens is going to announce, give a speech at his alma mater, University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. This is weird.
This is really weird.
I think it's just straight.
He's going into the Hall of Fame, and instead of going to Canton, he's doing it at his alma mater. Now, are they going to stream this into the building in Canton? Or
I don't know.
Or the stadium, I guess, is where they hold it?
Yeah, it's such a... I don't know. It seemed like it's... John didn't even seem to know, and John's one of the Hall of Fame voters. I guess if you're the Hall of Fame, would you make his speech available even though he's choosing not to be there for it? It's weird. It's really... I can't quite figure it out. I guess Terrell Owens feels snubbed in some ways that it took till his third ballot to be inducted, or now he's taking it out, but it seems like you're kind of spiting yourself at this point.
He's saying he wants to share it with where he went to school, but that doesn't seem like reason.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Have a party later. I mean, this is, you don't want to snub the people in Canton. And also, that's like, you know, you hear players always say, you know, I want to make it to Canton someday. Well, that's the big deal there. And now what's he going to do? Maybe go look at his bust some other time. I don't know if he's ever been there before, but it's a pretty cool place. I took the tour when I went out there for Elway's induction. And also there's maybe a financial part of it that Clayton was talking about, that maybe when you host a party there, it's really expensive. Maybe he doesn't have the funds to do that, which would be sad because he's made a good amount of money.
Yeah, but there's people have talked a long time that how much he might or might not have left from that.
Won a U.S. Junior Amateur at Gold Mountain and then to win the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay. How much would you love having an annual PGA event in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, I think everybody would love it. I mean, with the golf courses that are up here and then the weather and not to mention the fact that this town is one of the best sports fan towns in the United States, the city. It's with the Sounders being, you know, the number one showing, the 12th man with the Seahawks. They would love to have it too, and hopefully we can make that work out.
Wait.
That was the first mention?
The Sounders are the example of why we're a good sports town?
It's Jordan Spieth.
He's a golfer.
Come on. Like, there's about 50 different reasons why we're a good sports town before you get to soccer.
Well, that's
Soccer Town USA.
That's Jordan Spieth's impression.
Yeah. The hydroplanes.
That's his opinion.
Which I loathe are a greater demonstration of our sports fandom than soccer.
Come on. Seafair's coming up. The hydros are fun.
The hydros are not fun.
Yeah. Jordan Spieth. No, he's right, though. Wouldn't you want to see an annual event here? A tour stop here? That just blows me away with all the money here.
Yes, it changed my whole life.
All the money here, and we can't find a corporate sponsor. When's Amazon going to do something and get a golf tournament here? And we've got the Boeing Classic, but we used to have
one. Is that for the seniors?
It's for the Champions Tour, Danny. They don't call them the seniors anymore.
Oh, really?
The Champions Tour.
Well, nobody knows how to has any idea what they're talking about.
That. It should be the Senior Tour. Yeah,
the That's Champions.
Like what they do for the Seahawk, you know, retired players. They call them legends. Now I'm like, oh, no. That's not. No, just call them what they are. They're old washed up farts, right? The Senior Tour. The old fart tour.
We had the Safeco Classic. Can I resume?
Oh, yes, by all means.
Yes, do the golf show.
We had the Safeco Classic down there at Meridian Valley for years and years. Doug MacArthur did a great job with that whole event, and I miss having it. Nope. Jordan Spieth won at Chambers Bay. They're going to change the greens there at Chambers Bay over the fall and the winter, and I think it's probably going to come back there at some point.
It appears from all the cranes around downtown that the region's really been suffering since the departure of the annual tour stop here in Seattle. We haven't really
recovered. I don't care. I just want one back. Sean Crew and I want something back so we can talk about it on the golf show on weekends here, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You got one coming this weekend?
No. No, I don't. Bark in the Park's coming up at the Mariners, though. Got a Bark podcast. If you want to download that, wherever you find podcasts, you can download it. I don't even know where you find podcasts, but 710sports.com if you want to.
Oh, let me pull up my Jim Moore business card.
This won't surprise you. I've tried all day to get my Bark in the Park tickets, and I can't get the damn Adobe Flash or whatever to get working on this computer, and then my Chromebook, I can't get it to work there, and so I'm planning on being there. But
you're just going to show up with River outside there, like, let me in.
No, you can't.
Let me in.
You have to get tickets ahead of time, the last business day before 5 o'clock. So I'm hoping. I might be there, though. I'm going to be passing out Bark business
tick,
cards.
Tick, 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 tick,
yeah,
tick.
I know.
4:51:29.
I know.
Jim Moore, will he be barking at the park or howling at the moon?
I hope so.
Japan lost the game. Belgium didn't win it. You were up 2-0 in a knockout round game. You make no substitutions. You don't bring on any kind of sub that changes tactically. Maybe bring off an attacking player. Bring on someone that could run a little bit more, cover ground, have some real range in the midfield. Shocking. And then the last goal, they went 114 yards in 13 seconds.
It's insane. How does
Foul
that happen?
Him.
Right. Thank you. Right?
Do whatever you have to do to get to extra time.
Taylor Twellman. Was there any doubt with that name that he was going to be anything other than a soccer player? Can you imagine Taylor Twellman playing middle linebacker for the Ohio State University? Oh, don't worry. Taylor Twellman will plug the middle.
There was a guy at Stanford who lived in the Sigma Chi house. His name was Biff Kensington III.
Yeah, sounds like a guy that had a real rough upbringing. Hands soft as a peach because he's never done work.
Danny, you're getting some heat from the soccer people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah?
You make fun of Seafair. You make fun of soccer. Why don't you get out, pal?
No.
Just leave town.
I like it here. There's a lot of things I like about Seattle.
What happened in this item here? Japan lost? Was Japan? Because they killed their psychic octopus.
Yes, they did kill their psychic octopus, which is it's a mollusk, actually, that was there. His name was Rabio, and he was turned into sashimi, which sounds like a delicious fate. For the psychic octopus.
Yeah, but he predicted the win over Colombia and the draw with Senegal.
Yes, but then he got chopped up, and he wasn't there. And they were up 2-0 over Belgium, and then Belgium came roaring back.
It had a perfect prediction record.
Doesn't mean he was any less delicious. More useful as food stuff or
Why
soccer predictor?
Why couldn't they wait until the World Cup was over?
Yeah, did they eat him before? Or
that's bad karma.
Yeah, it was before the match. They
karma?
Killed the octopus before the match.
Yeah. Well, I hope everybody who ate it got sick.
What?
Everybody watched that game and Japan got sick.
Yeah. It probably wasn't good for them, but yeah, whatever. do we believe in the psychic ability of an octopus? Or it's, you know that it's going to be delicious. Taki.
Sure. Why do they call it calamari?
It's type of squid? I don't know.
Is this a joke?
Isn't it top, isn't
it's
it type
a different
of
an, animal entirely.
Is it a type of an octopus?
No. It's a squid.
Is it?
Yes. Calamari is made of squid.
I always thought it was octopus for some reason.
No. Incorrect. Different animals entirely.
I think I was in the neighborhood.
Close.
And like horseshoes. There.
Horseshoes, hand grenades,
yeah, well, they
and
both swim.
Mollusks.
Yeah, they swim.
That would be there.
They're underwater.
So do we.
Yeah. Yeah, we also swim. Am I an octopus? Would you like to eat me deep fried,
Jim? I believe River does, too.
Don't we have to get on to Dan Quinn at this point?
We are going to talk to Dan Quinn. He's going to call
in. What do you have, Wyman?
He was saying, you know, like Danny's kind of like a skunk or an octopus. When it gets threatened, it
emits
some kind of, whether it's ink or a really strong smell.
I would say I'm more skunk than octopi.
There you go. That did not need to be said, Jim. Don't interrupt Danny.
Sweep of the dial, brought to you by Specialty Insulation. We've got Dan Quinn calling in next.